quite a bit about the February 1978 remarks that I made that got so much publicity. And I have here a telegram which arrived right after that, addressed to myself at the State Department. It says, "Congratulations on your wise China policy statement. Kind personal regards, Alf M. Landon." I remember State Roy coming and handing this to me and said, "Alf Landon, he's still alive." But it was interesting that he took the trouble to send that telegram. And the exact dates of the sessions that were involved in the normalization negotiations. First meeting with Wang Hua was at 10 o'clock on July 5 in Peking. The next one was on July 14 at 3:30 in the afternoon. The next one was on August 11, again in Peking, at 10:15 in the morning. Then on September 15 at 10:30 in the morning.
September 15.
You can copy this.
Oh, right. Okay.
All of those four meetings were in Peking. The next critical meeting was between President Carter and the new Chinese ambassador, Chai Zemin, in the White House, of course, on September 19. And then the next meeting with Wang Hua was also in the United States, in New York, at the UN, at the Chinese UN mission, on the 3rd of October, and that meeting we have described in detail. And then going back to China, the next and final meeting with Wang Hua as foreign minister was on the 2nd of November at 9 o'clock in the evening. And then, as has been recorded, he became ill, was no longer meeting following that, all these remaining meetings in Peking, with on December 4 at 3:30 in the afternoon with the Han Nianlong, who was described to me as the acting foreign minister. Whether that was put on the official record or not, I have no recollection. And then the four meetings with Deng Xiaoping, the first one on December 13 at 10 in the morning, the next one at the next day, December 14 at 4 in the afternoon, and that concerned itself with the procedure for making the announcements. And then that same day, at 9 o'clock at night, when we concluded the agreement, and then the final meeting the next day on December 15 at 4 in the afternoon, which was concerned itself with us making absolutely sure that Chinese were not misunderstanding our position relative to the sale of defensive arms to the authorities in Taiwan.
Refresh my memory. We tabled a second and revised joint communique on the evening of December 14. You didn't. Did you have an alternative communique on the 13th for him?
No, but the meeting on the 13th. The first meeting with Deng is when I had the new communique.
You did have a new communique.
And we worked from that in the very first meeting.
Uh-huh. And the 14th, you...
On the first meeting, remember, I have stated I was surprised because it was only one sheet, true, but it was in English. And... said yes, he wanted to see the copy, and then he took it and had it translated to him, and then he went back paragraph by paragraph and negotiated from what he was hearing as the translation.
On the 13th,
so that at the end of that session, we only had three major points, and those were concluded at the second session, at 9 o'clock at night on the 14th.
Do you remember what those three points were?
Well,
we went over that.
The major one was, of course, the anti-hegemony clause.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what the other two were.
Minor. Okay.
So that if you want to...
Right.
Now, you... in the last session, when we went over the press conference that I had on August 26th, relative to the candidate Reagan's statement on China policy, you asked, did I know what had been said in the press conference?
August 20th, we're talking about.
August 26th,
August 6th, yeah.
1980.
80.
Did I know what he had said in his press conference on August 25 in Los Angeles, when he went to Los Angeles to greet Mr. Bush on his arrival back from China? And the answer is yes, I did. I had sent from the State Department sent from ICA, U.S. Information, J. Matthews' story, which appeared in the Washington Post on August 24, and which was headlined, China Calls Bush Visit a Failure, and which recounted all of the events leading up to that. And then I had, under date of August 25, the prepared statement that Mr. Reagan delivered at the press conference, which was held in Los Angeles on August 25. And then, following that, on the same day of August 25, the statement again, but the questions and answers that that were raised at the press conference, so that I had that full knowledge. Now also, and I don't think I put this in the record, following the Bush visit, which was, as J. Matthews called it, without question, a failure in the eyes, certainly, of the Chinese. Individual reporters were asking me for meetings to discuss it, particularly in view of what had been said by Mr. Reagan on the departure of Mr. Bush, also in Los Angeles, so that in part my decision to hold a press conference was prompted by not wanting to talk to them individually, but deciding to talk to them all collectively, to get everything, to say the same thing to all of them at the same time. That wasn't the total reason, but that was part of it. And I think maybe we could, in the attachments that should have to this whole thing, I think
that's an excellent idea.
We'll put these
good.
Put
that's
these
excellent.
There.
That's excellent.
What did I do with my books? I lost my place. What did we leave? Yes. The last thing to which I referred was the reception hosted by Chen Tu, Director General of CAAC, for the Civil Air Delegation, because those negotiations were coming to a climax, and we were pushing hard to conclude them, because we wanted all the agreements out of the way in the hope that they'd be ready for signing when Vice Premier Boy Bo, as head of the Chinese head of their side of the Joint Economic Commission, would be in Washington some sometime in the following month of September.
Leonard, at this particular time in Washington, two issues were being addressed. I'm not precise in my memory on dating. One was sale of advanced jet fighters to Taiwan. The Carter administration made a decision in the summer to authorize Northrop and Northrop and I guess General Dynamics to discuss possibility of the sale of an advanced jet fighter with Taiwan. And the second issue was this diplomatic immunities for officials of the CCNAA. Were you consulted on either of those issues?
Yes. And we were apprehensive on the fighter sale question as to what that would do with the relationship, and if it were to go forward, that the ground should be prepared to the extent it could be, if it could be. And so we, from our end, we had a negative posture, but a backup position as to what should be if the decision to which we were essentially opposed was in fact made.
The decision at this point being not actually the sale, but the consultation with Taiwan. And had you come out against the consultations, against authorizing, in other words, these companies to enter into negotiations to see
whether
it was feasible?
We were negative on that, you know, not in the sense of saying it shouldn't be done, because very much afraid that the consultations led to some expectancy and capital commitments that you'd begin to build a momentum from an economic point of view that would override what might seem later on a wise foreign policy decision.
A slippery slope.
Exactly.
Kind of,
yeah.
Concern.
And on the question of the diplomatic personnel, the representatives of the Taiwan agency, we were worried about that because it was so long after the event as to look really to be a change. Our feeling had been if something like that was in mind, it should have been done immediately, and so that it could have been swallowed in the happier days of the immediately following normalization. So again, we were asked for our views, but not in a formal way. And so these were, as I remember it, from myself to Dick Holbrook,
mm-hmm.
essentially. At the end of August and the beginning of September, there was the National People's Congress held a session, and what was different about this was that for the first time in many, many years, foreigners who are other than representatives of communist nations were invited to some sessions, not all sessions, of the NPC. And I went to the opening session on August 30, and they afforded us simultaneous translation in the main languages. Went to another session on the afternoon of Tuesday, September 2, And then I think there were two other sessions that each embassy was allowed two people. And the other sessions, I had other senior representatives go.
So were all sessions open?
No, not all sessions were open, but all those sessions that
were open
to the guests. And the diplomatic personnel, we sat in the first balcony over on the left as we faced the stage where the members of the senior officials of the NPC, including all the vice premiers. And then to our immediate right were all the delegates of the what is it called, the the other popular grouping, consultative.
Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference.
Right, exactly. And all of those delegates sat to our immediate right. And then further over to our left with the press representatives. And it was very, very interesting.
What was interesting about it?
Well, to watch the behavior of the various leading Chinese political personages, to see those who would sit very sternly, those who would be quite relaxed. Deng Xiaoping was one. And
who was stern, do you remember?
That was the general demeanor. Those who were not, those who would say something in an aside to a neighbor during a reading would be very much the exception. Zhao Ziyang, who was slated to become premier in that session, was also one who seemed quite very much at ease.
They have a set speech that they read, copies distributed ahead of time, and everyone reads the text as they read out loud. Is that the way it works?
Yes, pretty much. The sessions in which there was debate from the floor, and this was one NPC when apparently not on the substance of the resolutions, but on implementation, on criticism of various ministries, there was quite free debate. Those were not open. Those sessions were not open to foreigners. And but there were at least two, I think maybe three sessions where there was very free debate, including criticism of actions carried out, but not a debate on shouldn't we change these words or so on in resolutions, nothing like that. But the fact that it was an attempt to make the process more open, still streamlined, still in our sense of the word cut and dried, with all of the real debate having taken place beforehand, before the decisions were frozen into words, nevertheless was quite a change. See, the previous NPCs, we would speculate as to when they were to be held. We'd keep track of air flights, and when there was an unusual number of air flights coming into Peking, we'd know that something was up, and you couldn't be sure that a major session had been held until after the event. that was true even of the NPC when there are, well, probably 5,000-6,000 at least who come in from outside Peking and who have to be housed, but who are housed all over the place so that except as you see a lot of limousines and other conveyances around the Great Hall of the People, you can't have any real knowledge that such a thing is going on, because Peking, of course, in Chinese tourist terms, is a great national attraction, and is always, particularly in the better weather months of the year, in September, October, fall, in that category, there's always a very large influx of people from the outside. At the same time, Governor Ray had a delegation from Iowa. I must say that I'm sorry to see him step out, because he was very, very sympathetic to the China policy.
Was Ken Quinn with him on this trip?
No, I don't think Ken had. He may have been. He probably was.
Where is he now? Do you know?
No.
Very capable.
Yes.
Extremely capable.
Then the maritime negotiations were going on. I see we had a reception for the maritime delegation, because we were pushing hard to get those agreements in hand. We had a delegation from the Department of Commerce in Peking in connection with an upcoming American industrial exhibit that I'll speak about bit later. And Roberta Peters also made her visit at this time and held master concerts for singers. And she told us that she had the same sort of warm rapport with the Chinese musicians, mostly singers, that Isaac Stern had with violinists. And that one remarkable reception that we had was for the Encyclopedia Britannica group. And of course, the negotiations had been concluded looking towards the Chinese edition. And then at the same time, a military delegation from the DOD came, headed by Perry and Deneen. And I remember we had a session with them on the Sunday morning, September 7, and because we did not have it in the conference room, we had it in the dining room. There was a large group in the room, must have been 30, 35 people. And Dr. Perry somewhat surprised us by talking about the next step in the Chinese in the relationship with the Chinese in military terms, to afford them strong technical assistance in making better weaponry of what they had, and somewhat making the point this could be done under the policy as enunciated. It did not need another high-level policy determination. And the reason for my surprise was to talk in these open terms in such a large meeting in an unprotected atmosphere. Was the same in my mind as saying it directly to the Chinese, which I think eventually during that that visit they did, but certainly it should have been in the context of finding out the Chinese reactions and their willingness.
We haven't really put on the record your own thoughts to this time about weapon sales to China, whether you think that it at this point was a policy being well handled, and B, how far you think, in retrospect, how far you think this policy could have gone. Would you want to turn to that now?
Yes, we may as well.
It's such an important issue. I might say that it's an appropriate juncture to discuss this issue because the Bill Perry visit was probably the most significant military exchange, defense exchange, that the Carter administration had. In a sense, the Brown visit was the high visibility one. The Liu Hua-Ching visit brought a list. Deng Biao, also a high visibility visit. But here was Bill Perry and Dineen. What was his first name? Bill Dineen, too? I don't remember his first name. D-E-N-E-E-N, wasn't it? Dineen?
D-I-N-N-E-E-N.
Oh, D-I-N-N-E-E-N.
I think his first name may have also been Bill.
Bill, that's my vague recollection. But Bill Perry was, after all, the head of all weapons development and research in the Pentagon, DDR&E.
Yes.
And extremely capable. He's now at Stanford. And for him to have been on board the policy of expansion of military relations with China guaranteed that the export control standards would be relaxed. He really administered the control standards. That was in his shop as well. And he was, in many ways, Secretary of Defense Brown's most trusted lieutenant. He's a person who one day could become Secretary of Defense in a Democratic administration, by the way.
I've seen Bill Perry lately. He's now the head of a small high-tech outfit in California. And we had on a group that I'm working with now in the National Academy of Sciences on the problems involving our high technology industry. He met with us on two separate occasions when we met in Santa Monica. Very bright. But in answer to your question, I was very much in favor of helping China become stronger in a military sense, particularly in a defensive sense. I was concerned as to how we were going about the making of the policy. And that was really jolted for me by the session I've just described, which we held on the morning of Sunday, September 7th. And I have here a copy of a memo which I, on the September 25th, 1980, gave to Secretary of State Edmund S. Muskie on this question, in which I said that the previous Friday, September 19th, he'd had an opportunity to discuss the Sino-American situation with Leon Billings, who was a close personal aide to Secretary Muskie, made reference to the Harold Brown visit and the new policy which was disclosed at that time, and that this new policy was discussed at length when the Chinese military advance team led by Deputy Chief of Staff Liu Hua-Ching visited the United States for some 6 weeks in the spring of 1980, followed by the return visit of the delegation headed by Vice Premier Gong Biao. I said, I was personally very supportive of this policy. It seemed to me to present to the Chinese the possibility of a slower but steadier way to increase their military capability at the same time that they develop their industrial infrastructure. The supposed alternative of permitting mass purchase of weapon systems was more apparent than real given their extreme shortage of foreign exchange and their limited absorptive capacity. One of the agreed follow-ups to the Gung Biao visit was the recently concluded delegation of DOD Research and Engineering headed by Deputy Secretary William J. Perry. This last visit was very successful. The rapport between the two sides, both civilian and military, was excellent.